Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Life Hacker for April 2nd. I am Adam Pash here with Adam Duchess and Whitson Gordon.
That's true.
We're going to be talking about stuff today. So,
what kind of stuff?
Let's kick it off with some news. Okay, so starting things off, Om Malik from GigaOM, the eponymous GigaOM, has announced or had a post earlier this week basically saying that he has very reliable sources that tell him that Google Drive, which is basically at least thought to be something like Dropbox from Google, is coming in the first week of April. And details were relatively sparse. But if from the sounds of things, it looks like a rumor we'd previously heard about it. There was a screenshot of something that looked like it. It's sort of the web interface looks something like Google Docs, if this is truly what it is. And it will have a desktop component, presumably somewhat like Dropbox. And it, according to the rumor at least, will start out for 1 gigabyte free. So what do you guys think? Google Drive.
I feel it sounds like it's basically Google taking what InSync does. I mean, they're taking what Dropbox does, but InSync is literally storing all their synced files in Google Docs and syncs all your files in Google Docs to the desktop. So it already exists, and you get that 1 gigabyte free, and you just pay Google for storage. So
do you think though that
they're kind of bad for them for one thing?
Do you think that it's anything, like, is there anything anyone's going to be excited about? Because that's not, I'm not using that now, because I don't really care that much. I don't want that.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone's already on Dropbox.
Yeah, I could be less excited.
It's kind of, there's not, I mean, aside from the fact that it will probably be cheaper, and some people might like it because it syncs their Google Docs. I mean, but there's so much more that Dropbox does at this point, feature-wise, that
that's a good point about price, though. If they do come out with, like, a, like, you can pay to get more storage. If it's anything like what you can pay to get more storage from
Google. Your Google.
Yeah. Then those prices are really great, better than Dropbox.
Oh, they're way better.
But if you're going for free, you get, we've talked about this countless times. Yeah. I have, like, 20 free gigs of space on Dropbox, and that is not, I'm not about to go down to 1 gig just for maybe, what, Gmail integration? What's that going to offer that Dropbox doesn't already offer?
Yeah, it's really if you wanted to pay.
Google's also in the situation where all of the post-Dropbox competitors are, which is that Dropbox was the first to really, like, nail it with that sort of seamless sync. And Spider Oak, SugarSync, like, there are these other services that have come out, and a lot of them are offering, like,
really
more features and good deals and whatnot. But Dropbox is, it's simple, it's set it and forget it, and it's a service that you're, like, you're in.
Yeah.
And once you're in it, it's
it
there's
just
no,
works
like,
so well.
There's no purely compelling reason to ditch it for something else when it works very well. You can get a lot for free. And in my case, I'm happy to pay for it because it works so well.
Yeah, and I have to say it has a lot to do with the desktop software for me with Dropbox, because I used to use SugarSync, and I loved SugarSync initially, but I had a bunch of problems with it. I mean, like, iTunes was, it didn't sync iTunes, and nothing syncs iTunes very well, but SugarSync had a whole bunch of problems with it, and some of the other stuff, and it didn't, I felt like it this may have changed, but it didn't deal with file conflicts very well.
Yeah.
So Dropbox, but it also was like, if the software was initially, it's kind of like, felt like it was built in Java or something.
Yeah.
And Dropbox really feels like a native
definitely.
Application.
And Google, the big challenge at this point basically is, one, making it better in any way. It's the same thing. I did a post a month or two ago that was about Google is AOL, is Facebook, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was basically talking about right now Google's in a situation where they're not really building new and innovative products so much anymore as they are either acquiring good products or copying existing products. So Google Plus, for example,
copying Facebook.
Whatever, you know, it's got some original things about it, but Google Plus, no one at Google, like I said in the post, like woke up from a dream and was like, I have the greatest idea, Google Plus. Really, Google was like, we need something competitive in this space. We need to be able to collect this data that's out there that no one else is giving us, that Facebook isn't giving us and Twitter isn't giving us. And so I feel like this is like trying, you know, it's just trying to get more buy into the Google ecosystem, which is understandable, but it's not going to, unless they're doing something original, it's hard to be compelling for us to use.
I think there's a big difference in like, so obviously there are problems with Google just acquiring a bunch of people. The quality of their products just hasn't been as good as we would like. But I think there's a big difference between acquiring a product that's great and original and just trying to copy something. Because you're just trying to copy something that's already swept the nation. You're wasting money and you're wasting time because no one's going to use it. Well, and like, Google Plus is great, I love it, but you know what, it's like, it's just not going to catch on in the way that they would like, I think.
Well, that's
and same with Google Drive, but Google, you know, services like Google Voice are great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Gmail is like the shining example of when Google nailed it, which was like, email wasn't new, that's whatever, but like, Google was like, email kind of sucks, one, and when Gmail came out, it was at a time where I had a 20 megabyte cap on my email. And I was deleting constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I was always battling with like, and Gmail was like, yo, you get a gig.
Yeah, I paid for hosting because of that cap.
Yeah. So whatever.
I was like too young for this.
Well, so we'll have to sit around and we'll see what happens. Assuming the rumors are true, assuming it does come out in early April. We'll wait and see, and hopefully there's something compelling beyond just a Dropbox knockoff.
Mm.
Okay, so another thing in the news, now actually sort of a couple weeks ago at this point, but recently a potential employer asked their potential employee to hand over their Facebook credentials, their login, username, and password, so that they could vet that potential employee by rifling through their stuff. Which, of course, is absurd, and it's led to a lot of talk about, basically, well, whether or not that is something that anyone should be able to do,
which,
roundly, everyone says no. And two, just like the extent to which you want to sort of have that interplay of social with your employers, beyond just the password thing, which everyone can agree is insane.
It's ridiculous.
But also, you know, like, do you friend your hiring manager on Facebook? Do you become friends with people at work, your boss, whatever?
I have.
You've done which?
I've
friended your employer?
I think I was...
I mean, we're both friends with you.
Well, that's different. But one of my previous jobs, I think I don't know if I was at the time, because I didn't really use Facebook, but I was friends with my hiring manager and my boss.
Well, and there are things to say about going either direction, because obviously
it wasn't
making
a bad
connections
thing.
With people can be a really good way to get a job in the first place.
Yep.
And Alan, I believe, Alan Henry, life hacker writer Alan Henry, did a post sort of talking about the issue. But I think, you know, you guys, his post was, what do I do when my employer wants to be too social?
Mm. How do you handle, you know, when they friend request you, you know, before the interview or after the interview or once you've been hired, and whether you should...
Oh, no, no, finish yourself.
No, that was basically whether you should go along with that.
Well, I don't think there's really so much of a problem anymore because Facebook actually implemented those lists that no one really uses or pays attention
to.
Which
you should be using.
Yeah, exactly, because then you can just friend them and put them in a list where they see two things and there's really no difference. And then you don't have to worry about like the social implications at work or whatever. And then they don't, you know, then they only see what you want them to see. But I think I think what's kind of worrisome, and who knows how much this has actually happened, the problem of people asking for passwords.
Right.
But the fact that it does come up makes me wonder how we're perceiving the way we act in public. Like they think that this is not a big deal because everyone's just putting everything out there anyway.
Yeah. I can tell you this, if my potential employee required me to give them my Facebook credentials, they would be really bored
Yeah.
The least used Facebook account on the planet. Yeah, they could see all of the posts I make to the Lifehacker page.
And yeah. Nothing else. To my... A few Instagram pictures.
But anyway, bit of advice. Don't give anyone your Facebook password. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
That sums it up.
Ooh, yeah. Last, and this was actually sort of my favorite bit of news from last week.
I have no idea about any of this.
XBMC, the media center XBMC, has updated to a brand new release, XBMC 11.0 Eden. And it's added a lot of really cool features and just polished to XBMC. It's added some speed boosts, AirPlay support, so yeah. Any iOS device or even Android, whatever, anything that supports
AirPlay,
streaming audio or video to AirPlay now works to stream audio or video to your XBMC box. The XBMC Live CD is changed to XBMC Ubuntu. So
have you given XBMC Ubuntu a shot? Because I know you're live. I'm not a live user.
I've upgraded to XBMC Ubuntu.
What's it like? Is it a little bit slower? Is the desktop nice?
It looks exactly...
It's really the same.
I'm never going to use the desktop, so whatever. It looks... It's basically the same.
Okay.
It's
for all I hear the installation was supposed to be like a little bit easier. Because it doesn't, if you don't have, to do it all through text.
Actually, the installation
was more of a pain. Really?
Because it was, you know, I've got it plugged into that, and you still need, like, a keyboard or a mouse plugged in to do it. And it gives you, like, a GUI, a graphical, like, interface for hitting next and stuff, mm-hmm. but, like, the resolution wasn't scaling correctly on my thing, and, like, it actually worked better. It was easier to install before, but
that's funny.
That may not be for all people, but in my specific instance.
But it wasn't a big enough difference to make it, like, a... You know,
no.
Cause an uproar in the hash house.
It worked. I got it all upgraded. It works really well. The AirPlay thing I'm pretty stoked about because I have an AirPort Express hooked up to my computer back there specifically for AirPlay. But it also means I have to like switch the input on my stereo when I want it. Now it's be like the same thing. It's basically
plus you can do
the
video, which is nice.
Yeah, and the video, which there were like sort of some backwater hacks that you could apply and scripts that I had tried and that worked half the time. So, but it's really nice. It's now integrated. It works.
It can't play DRM'd videos from iTunes though, which is kind of a bummer. Which is like the one reason I would find that really useful because if I had a video on my iOS device, I probably already have it in XBMC.
That's a bummer.
The speed boosts were really nice from someone who has a very low power media center. Mm-hmm. It just seemed a little bit snappier in like loading images, you know, big images and stuff like it does. The add-on rollback thing is kind of cool. Just to have as a security thing, you can, if you really like XBMC add-ons, which I would highly recommend taking a look through their add-on repositories because there's some really cool stuff. If an add-on updates and you don't like the update, you can roll back to the latest version with just, you know, one tap, which is very, very nice.
Piece of cake.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
But anyway, XBMC, it's looking awesome. I'm still waiting for the Apple TV 3 to get jailbroken so I can install XBMC on that and see if things can really fly at that point because that would be... Awesome. I would replace the little Acer that I use as my main home theater right now. But anyway, cool.
If you have a media center, absolutely worth checking out. If you don't have a media center, absolutely worth making one. whether it's an Apple TV or a home built box or something.
With a really good media center like XBMC, you can navigate and play Hulu with your remote. You can navigate. There's this awesome plugin for XBMC called TV Shows that we're thinking about looking into more for a post at some point that aggregates every streaming possibility on the web, and you can basically go through free cable is what it's called. Is that what I said? Maybe. You can basically go through by channel click on the channel and then go through the shows that they offer.
It's really well done. I remember trying it a while back and only half the stuff really worked, but supposedly it's working much better now.
Anyway, awesome. That's the news. Let's kick over to some questions. So to kick us off, reader Adam writes in, I was wondering what your thoughts were on installing OS X on a Windows hard drive partition. Are the steps the same? How would one choose which OS they wanted to boot? Okay, I'm not sure I entirely understand this question.
So wait, he says installing OS X on a Windows partition?
Windows hard drive partition.
Okay, so let's start by saying that there seems to be a little bit of a misconception out there with some people that you can just install OS X on any Windows machine, which is really not true. I'm going to assume that you are on a Hackintosh-capable machine. If you are not, I would not even attempt this because it's...
To double-check, in case you don't know, I would head to TonyMacX86.com, head to the forums, post your specs, and ask someone to vet them for you.
Yes. If it is Hackintosh-capable, or if you decide to build a Hackintosh-capable machine... In that case, you then have a PC on which you can install OS X. Now, I've done this a few times. It's very complicated in which order you install certain things because different OSs like to try and take over your hard drive in different ways. The easiest way to have OS X and Windows dual booting on a PC, or on a non-Mac PC, I should say, is to install OS X first and Windows second.
Does it matter if you had like two hard drives and... Curious.
Two hard drives is actually the easiest way to do it. So as opposed, so you could partition one drive and have them both on there, but that's kind of more of a pain in the butt than it's worth, in my opinion. If you have a second hard drive, it's incredibly simple to install OS X on one hard drive. Okay. You install Windows on the second hard drive. Steps are basically the same, and then you're done, and you can dual boot. We've done a guide on triple booting a Hackintosh with OS X, Windows, and Linux, and you can obviously just ignore the Linux steps and dual boot with OS X and Windows. So we'll put that in the show notes, and I would recommend checking that out.
Yeah, and cool. And just to, I've been meaning to say this, but in general, the show notes, anytime, lifehacker.com/the show is going to be the quickest way to find the show notes for each episode.
Yep.
So yeah.
Cool.
Okay, now we've got a caller. Okay, cool. So this is a tough question to answer because a lot of there is a ton of media, and the internet has only accelerated the pace at which media is created and distributed, and so you have virtually limitless options to like absorb your attention, and also everything's trying to convince you like that this should be read. So apart from something that is like an ephemeral like cat singing in the toilet, like that, just like the image in your head, you're like, oh, I need to click that because I now want to see a cat singing in a toilet.
Is that a real thing?
Probably.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there are things like you know, you want to improve yourself. You see something that's like, oh, this seems really interesting. I'm interested in learning about this, whatever. And you can end up bookmarking or Instapapering like a billion things that you'll never get to. Mm. That said, I actually find personally that a lot, being able to offload in those ways is actually a really nice way to sort of keep things around that you maybe will get to, but not think about it as a, like an email inbox. Like my Instapaper account, or Read It Later, or Readability, any of those services. I use it, and I use it as sort of like a bookmark for things I want to read that like I think will be rewarding to read later. Like I have a specific set of sort of criteria that is like, this is the kind of thing. So for me, it's things that I want to read, I think will be like interesting or educational, or just like a really well-written article or whatever, don't have time to do now, and then I'll just go nuts with that. Mm. I don't read a lot of the stuff that ends up in Instapaper, but anytime I get around to a time where I've got a free period and I can dedicate it to like reading, I'll open up Instapaper and I'll just like go through what I've bookmarked, and I've got just a great list of things that I can cherry pick from those then. So it's sort of like whittling down into what I've got time for.
Yeah, and it's also really great when you can go through and search that stuff later, because you may put something in there, forget about it, you really wanted to look at it, but then you can go, then you remember it 3 months down the line, and then it's at least there. I think it's really a lot about letting go and also filtering things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is in itself kind of a filter, because you can just throw stuff in there and let it and get rid of it. But also, I mean, there are ways in RSS readers to create smart lists of your feeds and just get certain articles. You can use apps like Flipboard to filter that out. You obviously can filter things in your email, especially with Gmail. That's great. And then, I think like people just need to realize that you're not going to get to everything, and you do your best to try to, here's the stuff that you want to focus on, and then focus on it and say, if I get to the other stuff, great. If I don't, whatever.
I like the idea of creating sort of tiers of attention with it, where like if I'm in an RSS reader, so you know I've got the Lifehacker RSS feed. First of all, just very briefly, you can filter our feed if you use like if you want by tag, you could be lifehacker.com/top, which is our top story, /index.xml, and you can do that with any of our tags.
Like Windows, if you're a Windows.
Yeah, and you can get more specific. Like you could do download/Windows filter it that way too.
But beyond that, I personally really like sort of starting at broad places and then whittling down through tiers. So for example, if I'm using my RSS reader, I'll be going through and maybe I will star a bunch of things, and then I can put the attention on the starred things and then sort of weed out which is really like worthwhile and which isn't, which I'm going to send to Instapaper, which I'm just going to forget about. And it's also in the same way, I wrote something a week ago, I think, that was about like communication and sort of how I like to use communication based on sort of the immediacy. So it's like IM is for like right now, email is for like today or whatever, so that you're not constantly checking your email, you're not a slave to your email. But I feel like there's a similar thing with consumption of media, where you can sort of like create separation and sort of whittle things down. Twitter is one of those things that is more like the IM for me of media consumption, where it's like if something comes up in Twitter, I'm much more likely to read it like right now as opposed to my RSS feed.
Yep.
I know that this, I don't feel like we're necessarily 100% answering your question, but I will recommend that you check out our friend Clay Johnson has a book out that came out at the beginning of this year called The Information Diet, and he has a website, informationdiet.com, and he's all about the idea of sort of a conscious consumption of media, where you cut down on all of the noise, increase the signal, and go to the source. And basically just like ideas for how to sort of best consume media in a world where information overload is the norm.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend very much checking that out as well. So our next question from Anonymous says, I am a student in high school and it's hard for me to take notes and listen to my teacher at the same time. Is there any app for my MacBook? where I could record my teacher's lectures and fill in the gaps on my notes.
Yes, it's called Notebook. it's made by a company called Circus Ponies. And it's a really great thing, I think, for students. And, you know, if you take a lot of notes in meetings, it's good too. But you can record the audio and type while you go. Windows people can also get Microsoft OneNote, which has that feature as well. And that's
interesting. I've never, so with Notebook, does it then tie your notes to the audio?
Yeah.
Times sort of like the way SoundCloud has comments.
Yeah, you can put little audio clips with it. It's not like a LiveScribe pen where you write on the notes and then you can play it back and it shows your writing as you go.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tie little audio clips to it.
All right, so our next question comes from a caller.
Hello, my name is Jacob, and I'm looking to get rid of my cell phone service, and because I don't use it very often, that I would like to my phone number that I've had for quite some time. Is there a way to port this number to a VoIP provider or a Google Voice, Skype, something like that, and still be able to keep that number so people can reach me, and I would continue to make calls, generally using just Wi-Fi connections, since I work at home and I call most of the time. So if there's any kind of quick fix there, I'm searching quite a bit for a resolution,
okay, so Whitson is our resident number porter / VoIP
user. So I would say one thing to start off. You say you want to get rid of your cell phone service because you don't use it. That's fine. But no VoIP solution is going to give you the ability to make emergency calls. So if you don't have a cell phone, I highly suggest that you get a home phone service. I'm sure you can find an inexpensive one, because if you are only using VoIP, you can't call 911.
Can I interject? I do know, though, if you don't have a cell phone plan,
mm-hmm.
but you have a cell phone with like a SIM card in it or something.
That's true. They can make emergency calls.
They can make emergency calls. So
very
I would say,
point. I totally forgot about that.
Go ahead and cancel, but keep your phone.
I forgot about that,
card.
Even though I wrote an article about it last week.
Yeah, or just don't rob or get robbed or get into a situation where you're going to get murdered or
set yourself on
Stay
fire.
Out of danger,
that's,
man.
Yeah.
Anyway, but getting to the point. Yes, there are a lot of great ways to do that. I personally have ported my old cell phone number to Google Voice, and it wasn't a perfectly seamless process, just because when you do that, your carrier is going to want to hit you with an early termination fee unless your contract is up. So if your contract's up, it's going to be a very seamless process. You just go to Google Voice, sign up for an account, go to the port your number option. It'll cost you $20. Your old number will be your Google Voice number, and you can forward it to whatever phones you want, including Skype, which I do in my apartment. They're very easy to make play nicely with each other. You just need to pay for an online number and maybe get a little bit of Skype credit, probably like $30 a year.
You can get unlimited in the US and Canada for, I think, yeah, for that.
Oh, so sorry, the way that Google Voice works is I have it set up with Skype. So my Skype only can't make outgoing calls. It can only get incoming calls, which is fine because I just dial my numbers from the Google Voice web interface, and then it calls Skype, so it counts as an incoming call,
mm-hmm.
which is much cheaper than making out when also signing up for outgoing calls.
I don't think you have to do both anymore. I think they changed it.
Okay. Either way,
I'm not sure though.
You I can. Only pay for an incoming number with Skype web number. It's cheap,
mm-hmm.
Literally like $30 a year, $60 a year. It's way cheaper than getting a home phone or cell phone service, and it works pretty darn well with Google Voice. So that's what I use. That's what I would recommend. I don't know what other services you could port. I don't know if you could port your number to Skype. But I highly recommend Google Voice, because then you can literally just forward those calls to anything you want. So if you do get a home phone or cell phone again down the line, you don't need to go through that process again. You can just forward those calls to whatever phones you want.
And yeah, if you port that number to Google Voice, it's aces for life.
Or as long as Google Voice is around.
Which is good, because it's not easy to get it out of Google Voice.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. But yeah, I now officially, my Google Voice number will be my number for life. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't convince certain people. Like, my mom had memorized my old number for years and like refused to memorize a new one, so I just ported it. I said, screw it. Mm-hmm. It was easy enough. $20.
I'm making everyone use both, because some people want one, some people want the other. I'm like, okay, everyone has to learn both, because you all suck.
All right, reader Alfian writes, how do you get a personalized email address? For example, adam@lifehacker.com.
Well, you can't have it lifehacker.com because that's ours.
You can beg.
Unless you want to get a job here.
It's actually, it's probably as easy as it's ever been. It's really simple. I actually think there are many ways you can go about doing this. The easiest way, and I'm assuming when you say personalized email, you probably also want that personalized email to use Gmail.
Yeah,
because why wouldn't you?
In which case, I think the easiest that I've ever done probably, and this is probably available with many other services, but using Dreamhost.
Yeah, they set that up for you.
Which is a web hosting company that is pretty great, especially for just like really simple needs for web-related things. You can sign up for Dreamhost. You can buy a domain if you don't already have one. And when you have that domain at Dreamhost, it's literally like a one-click operation to say, like, host my email with Google Mail or Gmail. And voila, you've got your email. It's super simple to set up. And then basically you're just using Gmail. So there will be sort of an admin interface where you can invite new users to it, which is something like at google.com/account/settings, or I don't really know. It's one of when you're logged into that account, though, you can. So, but you add new users that way, and you invite new users and whatever. So, like, we have, of course, a Life Hacker one where
it's just Gmail.
Yeah, and it's just Gmail. It's
awesome.
But it's super easy. There are other ways, but honestly, that's just it's a really easy way. I think actually even Google probably. I remember I think a couple years ago Google added it where you could buy a domain through them. And go that way.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
But if you're looking to buy a domain anyway, you may as well get a little hosting with it too.
Yeah.
And I would Dreamhost is or a comparable service is a really good way to do that.
Yeah.
Plus get the email.
And if you don't want to use Dreamhost, if you don't want to use Dreamhost's email app or Gmail, Dreamhost has Squirrel Mail built in.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also just edit your MX record, which is something you'd learn about when you sign up for one of these things, and then go with anything else. I think like even if you want more privacy, I think like Hushmail is an option too.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of other ways to go, but Gmail is definitely the best way to go, and that's the quickest way. But if you just wanted to pay for the domain name, which is $7 to $12 wherever
a year,
and you could do it directly through Google. Google doesn't charge anything for Google Apps if you put ads in it, so. It could be a really, really cheap way to get a custom email address. And you can do all sorts of other things. Like, they have sites and all those, whatever else it does, docs and the calendar.
All those things.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, cool. So that's it for questions for today. Let's kick over to downloads. All right, downloads.
Yes.
Okay, the first download for today is RT7 Lite, spelled like an app that doesn't want anyone to be able to find it.
And it's spelled differently all over like the website and program too. It's absurd.
RTSE7ENLITE.
This is a download we talked about in depth on the site a couple weeks ago. It is essentially a program that lets you take a Windows installation disk and craft it into the OS of your dreams. You can remove Windows features you don't want. You can slipstream in updates. You could add like Service Pack 1 to your installation disk. You don't have to go through Windows Update and install that every time you install. You can even add in your favorite applications. So whenever you install Windows, it automatically adds in things like Firefox and Pigeon and Winamp or whatever else you want. It's super awesome. If you are a Windows user and you plan on doing a clean install anytime soon, absolutely recommend checking it out. There's tons of stuff you can do with it.
I don't want to I don't want to take us too far on a tangent, but I love Whitson's, Whitson's apps are all so old school. Firefox, Pigeon, Winamp, all your favorite cool new apps.
Windows doesn't have a lot today. Of really new things going on.
Those are all wonderful apps.
I know, it's just, yeah, I'm
okay, OS X, the download for today is called Porthole. And Porthole is a menu bar application that lets you stream audio from your Mac to any AirPlay destination. It's similar to an application called
Airfoil.
Airfoil has been around for a really long time. Airfoil is more expensive. And
it can do a lot, though.
It can do a lot.
It has a lot of advanced features if you want to check it out, but...
It's not... Airfoil is awesome. This is just cheaper, and it's really simple, and I think for most people, it might be... It's $10. It might be more sort of what most people need anyway.
Yeah.
It's got a little menu bar app when you want to send it to another AirPlay destination in the house, like your stereo or your new XBMC 11.0 Eden installation. You just click the menu bar, select the name of that destination, and... It's rolling.
Perfect for streaming things like Spotify or other app, you know, Grooveshark, yeah. Things that don't support AirPlay natively, like iTunes.
And I was actually confused about this, and maybe you remember, or maybe even asked you about this time, but in Mountain Lion, AirPlay mirroring is supported, which is basically will take your entire monitor and put it on your Apple TV, whatever.
Whatever
can receive that. But does that also mean that just like AirPlay audio streaming will be a system-wide preference?
I don't think so. The way it really should. But the way it looks, it's like you're mirroring a display. It doesn't look like it just sends the audio. And
that's what I was confused about.
I kind of don't want to say this, but because I don't know. But AirParrot, which is the app that lets you do that in OS X Lion, I think you can do it in Snow Leopard. But which is also $10, I think that has the same functionality in that it doesn't send the audio, it just sends the video. But it has the advantage of being able to extend your desktop.
Right.
I would also mention very, very briefly that if you are a huge cheapskate like me,
go to the command line.
There's a program called RaopX, RAOPX, that you can run on the command line that will stream audio to an Airport Express. There's like a 9-second delay. It's kind of
it's a considerably longer delay.
And it is from the command line, but it's worth it. But that's totally free. You guys.
It's $1 you save for every second of delay.
Okay.
Some quick math.
Moving on to our mobile devices. Paper Mill is an Android app.
Paper Mill is an Android Instapaper client. We're just talking about Instapaper. There are quite a few Instapaper clients for Android already that are kind of just. The Instapaper developer is very Mac and iOS centric.
And he
said that he doesn't want to go through the trouble of creating an Android client, but he has an API for anyone to do it. And he said if one came out that was really good and really kind of exemplified everything that
for Android, yeah.
Yeah, for Android that exemplified everything that he meant to do with the iOS clients, that he would make that the quote official Android app, and I believe that's what he's done with this one. So if you are looking for Instapaper on Android, this is a really good one to look for. It's a little bit young. It might not be as feature-filled as some of the other ones, but it looks great.
It's a good bet.
It's solid. Yeah.
Cool.
But if you're an Android user, there's also always Read It Later and Readability, which is what I'm currently hooked on.
And those have
official support for Android.
And those are also on iOS, and they're both also great.
Yep.
Okay, lastly for iOS, we have Camera Grabber.
This is an easy one. This is, and a lot of people don't get this because if you have iOS 5.1, you have that little shortcut on your iPhone, on your imaginary iPhone, where you tap the camera button on your lock screen and the camera comes up, and then you have your activator jailbreak shortcut, which opens up the camera after 3 taps of the home button. Mm-hmm. Another way to do it, if you're jailbroken, you're still on iOS 5.0.1. and you can't upgrade to 5.1 or you'll lose the jailbreak, but you still want the camera shortcut that's always persistent. Camera Grabber is really cool because on the lock screen, you don't tap anything or whatever. You tap and then just slide the lock screen away, and it's kind of, And part of it's like you could still use this in 5.1 if the jailbreak was available because it's kind of cool. But functionality wise, it will bring that persistent camera.
Brings the one great thing about iOS 5.1. Yes, to those who are jailbroken and done 5.0.1.
The only thing outside of Japan that iOS 5.1 did.
Yeah.
So it's basically reverse notification drawer. You swipe up instead of swiping down.
Yep.
Cool.
Baller.
That's it.
All right, well, that is it for this week. We will see you next time.
If you'd like to ask us a question, send us an email at tips+asklhshow@lifehacker.com. Alternatively, leave us a message at 347-687-8109. Try to keep your questions to about 30 seconds so we can keep the show moving. And thanks for watching, listening, or however you're getting this podcast from the internet to your brain.
Okay.
Download. Oh, we were supposed to clap. I forgot. We were supposed to clap for the clips.
Hey.
Now you have one out of
the I always forget because I've used
the first clip, sync to Buddy's bark.